It is Friday, December 20th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
KUAF is supported by Northwest Arkansas Media, publishers of Northwest Arkansas Times, Springdale and Rogers Morning News, Benton County Daily Record, and the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. These daily newspapers offer local, state, national, and international news, plus business and Razorback news. NWAOnline.com for more information.
Ahead on Ozarks, a company that began on the University of Arkansas campus is on a list of 2013's top technological inventors. Plus, the founders of the Early Morning Bourbon Girls, Rebecca Champagne and Meredith Martin Motes, talk about the band's upcoming reunion show at Maxine's Tap Room and play a couple of songs inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio.
First, Arkansas's unemployment rate remained unchanged from October to November, though it's still higher than it was a year ago this time. Data released this morning from the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics puts the state's unemployment rate for the month at 7.5%, or 0.3% higher than in November 2012. While the jobless rate remained unchanged from October, the state's overall labor force grew by about 3,700 workers, and the number of unemployed people in the workforce shrank by about 700 people. However, the overall labor force shrank by nearly 23,000 people, and about 2,600 more people are unemployed when compared to the numbers from November 2012.
The battle to strike down a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage in Arkansas will continue. Pre-trial motions brought by the state to dismiss the case were denied by Pulaski County Circuit Court Judge Chris Piazza on Thursday afternoon.
The big important thing is the motions to dismiss were denied. Those were incredibly important that we get beyond that hurdle. The steps that we need to take now, we're figuring out which approach to take. I think that the court is anticipating us getting a quick hearing set for the full-blown trial, and we have discussed getting that scheduled. But I feel like we won.
On July 2nd, attorney Cheryl Maples filed a lawsuit known as Wright versus the State of Arkansas on behalf of lead plaintiff Kendall Wright and her spouse Julia Wright, two of 43 named individuals challenging the ban. Maples also asked for injunctive relief for couples legally married in other states. That motion was denied by Piazza as well. Maples says she was disappointed that the judge's three-sentence-long order failed to elaborate on his decision. Maples and co-counsel Jack Wagner have not yet decided to appeal the denial of their motion for injunctive relief. 17 states and Washington, D.C. have legalized same-sex marriage.
The NWA Startup Cup announced this year's winners yesterday at the Bentonville Public Library. The finalists were selected from a field of more than 30 entrepreneurs who entered the business model competition. First place was given to Rob Turner of Turner Light Covers, which offers a recessed mounted light cover. Winners will receive free professional services with value amounts ranging from $7,500 for first place to $2,500 for third place.
Beginning today, a portion of Leroy Pond Drive in Fayetteville will be closed for construction work. According to the city, the street will be closed between Razorback Road and West Clinton Drive so that crews can install a water main line across the street. The work is set to be complete in about a week, though detour routes will be marked. The closure comes as the University of Arkansas will hold fall commencement ceremonies tomorrow at the nearby Bud Walton Arena.
Also tomorrow in Fayetteville, the city compost facility will be open from 8 until noon. It will be open to allow residents access to Saturday hours during the month of December after the compost facility was closed to the public last weekend because of the winter storm. In addition, city trash collection will be delayed by one day next week because of the Christmas holiday. Wednesday residential and commercial collection routes will run on Thursday. Thursday routes will run on Friday, December 27th. The solid waste transfer station will have modified hours Christmas Eve and be closed next Wednesday, while all other solid waste and recycling facilities will be closed on both days.
A cold front will bring the threat of severe weather to much of Arkansas beginning tonight through tomorrow night. Meteorologist Sean Clark with the National Weather Service says 2 to 3 inches of rain are possible, with some localized areas potentially seeing up to 4 inches.
Could see the threat of some heavy rainfall, which could lead to flash flooding. A flash flood watch is in effect for much of northern and western Arkansas. And there is an outside chance for some severe weather with strong thunderstorms, which could include large hail, damaging winds, and possibly even some tornadoes.
The storm system is expected to exit the state to the northeast late Saturday, with rain tapering off on Sunday. Periods of rain and possibly a thunderstorm tonight, with lows from 35 in northwest Arkansas to 41 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, expect periods of rain with highs from 42 in northwest Arkansas to 47 in the Arkansas River Valley. Mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of rain before 3 a.m. tomorrow night, then a chance of sleet and a low of 32 in northwest Arkansas, and a 30% chance of rain before midnight and a low of 38 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone is Michael Tilley, who is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com. And Michael, most times at the end of a year, say the last 15 days or so, the news world slows down, especially in a non-election year. That has not been the case this week.
No, it's not been the case. So it makes you wonder, you know, what's going to happen when the year cranks back up. And as you noted, it will be an election year next year. You and I are going to meet each other coming and going.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Well, let's talk about the latest edition of the Compass Report that was issued this week and put online at the City Wire. Encouraging economic numbers for both Northwest Arkansas and the Fort Smith Metro, if I'm reading it correctly.
Yes, you are. And it's no surprise, Northwest Arkansas just continues to be red hot. And, you know, we even have analysis that looks at what that may mean in the future in terms of the political and business relationship and landscape in Arkansas between Northwest Arkansas and Central Arkansas. You know, for forever, since the history of Arkansas, Central Arkansas has been the, it's been the hub. Well, if we continue to see this trend in Northwest Arkansas, at some point, you know, when do those two regions begin to vie for the first, you know, the largest metro area in Arkansas? So that's an interesting angle from that report. Hmm. For the Fort Smith area report, I had someone liken it. They read it and said it's like Fort Smith has been, you know, a patient with a really bad disease, and the doctor finally says, "Well, it looks like we've got the disease. The disease is gone. Now you're just going to have to recover.
Get stronger.
Get your energy back." And so I think that's the good news for that Fort Smith report. It showed essentially a trend now of several quarters where I think the best thing we can say is that all the losses, the hit that the region took after 2008, hopefully that region has bottomed out and it's on its way up. It's going to have a long ways to go. I mean, the workforce is still considerably smaller than it was several years ago. For example, the number of employed in the MSA is just under 124,000 now, and that was almost 131,000 in 2006. So it gives you some idea of the recovery that will be needed. But I think the good news is maybe the bleeding has stopped in the metro area. In Central Arkansas, our Central Arkansas report, they're stable. They're not growing. They're not really falling back, but it's just kind of a muted economy, so to speak.
Well, over the past several years, when you have done some stories, whether it was with a Compass report or just a different story talking about the Fort Smith economic viability, something that comes up over and over is diversify. The manufacturing can't be as big a player as it once was just because of changing technology. So to that degree, the announcement or the possibility of an osteopath school in Fort Smith is good news, right?
Well, it is, and it's a long way off. They have several hurdles to jump through, no significant hurdles, but just a lot of paperwork. All the pieces kind of have to fall into place. But, you know, I can tell you when I first heard about this, I was cynical that it would ever come together, and I guess maybe as a journalist that's my job. But, you know, after talking to some of the folks behind this, pushing this, the one thing is the money there the money is there for it from that Fort Smith Regional Healthcare Foundation. So in terms of a major hurdle, you've pushed past that. The money's there for it. That foundation was funded when HMA bought Sparks Health System back in 2009. So the money hurdle is over now. It's just the paperwork and getting it in place. The only controversy I've seen is that there's some, in the medical community, there's some maybe snobbery is not the right word, but osteopathy is kind of a is not it's not the on the same level, some would say, as traditional medicine. But regardless, if you can create a facility that's eventually housing 600 students, and you know, from my selfish perspective, I'd like to see that in a downtown Fort Smith setting. That'd be great for that area. But that could be a game changer for the economy, contributing about $100 million a year in terms of economic impact. That's their initial estimate. The low end of that estimate is $75 million. Either one of those would be good for Fort Smith.
Well, if that's a possible arrival in our region, a likely departure now, the corporate offices for Allen's based in Siloam Springs.
Right, and I don't want to say that it's certain that they'll lose their corporate presence, but it's not looking good for Siloam, and that's a hit. Siloam's really made a lot of progress. They've benefited from a lot of the growth in Northwest Arkansas. We often, when we talk about Northwest Arkansas, we talk about just the four cities: Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, and Bentonville. But Siloam Springs has really done well. Their downtown area is really, really looking good. How many of these hundreds of jobs do not remain? And just to catch the listener up, you know, Allen's is in bankruptcy, and then Seneca Foods, a company out of New York, state of New York, is agreed to buy them, and Allen's has agreed to the purchase. So if that goes through, you know, the Allen's Foods, you know, some of the facilities, warehouses, those type of things may stay in place, but Seneca already has its corporate headquarter presence. I doubt it's going to need a second one.
Exactly. I do want to point listeners to something you have on thecitywire.com, something called Outside the Wire, where you find articles or opinion pieces from other publications that have some relevance to this region. There's one from Forbes that you posted earlier this morning that's talking about the potential financial impact for Walmart created by this Duck Dynasty controversy.
Well, and it's, as we talked about before we recorded this, you know, when you put a lot of eggs in one basket, you want to hope that the bottom doesn't fall out of that basket. And, Forbes estimates there is over $400 million in Duck Dynasty-related retail sales in the U.S. in the past 12 months. That's a lot. It's huge. And roughly 50% of that, they estimate, comes from Walmart. So $200 million. Now, for a company that makes $13 to $15 billion a year, let's not get crazy and say $200 million is going to hurt them. But, you know, what you also have to think about is if they're in there buying the Duck Dynasty stuff, what else are they buying? You know, is that something to get the people in the store? So I'm sure that the folks in Bentonville, they're on 8th Street, were not happy when this controversy arose.
Finally, a towering figure in the Fort Smith legal circles, Eddie Christian, passed this week.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. A friend of mine who's in the legal business said the last bastion of a good defense attorney has passed away, and he was quite a character, well-respected. Even the attorneys that he took to school, so to speak, in the courtroom respected him. He wasn't one of those gotcha attorneys. He just knew his business. He knew the law, and, there used to be an old joke that if you were afraid that you were about to commit a felony or some crime, the first thing you'd do is go put Eddie Christian on retainer because he was good in that regard. But it is a tough loss for the legal community, that's for sure, and it's kind of a double loss. Eddie Christian Jr., who was going to carry that mantle on, remember, Eddie Christian Jr. was the one that went after the university over Houston Nutt.
That's right.
But his son passed away 3 years ago, so it's a tough loss for the Christian family.
Well, Michael Tilley, thank you again for a wonderful 2013 with your help. You and I will not talk for a couple of weeks. We have a couple of special editions of Ozarks at Large the next two Fridays. I'll talk to you again in early 2014. How's that?
All right. And you have great holiday season as well.
Thank you, sir.
in just a moment on Ozarks at Large. Nanotechnology continues to bloom at the University of Arkansas and in Northwest Arkansas. A Springdale-based company that began on the U of A campus is included on a 2013 list of top inventions. And later, the Early Morning Bourbon Girls were not just any band.
But I remember Meredith and I both being pretty terrified, but particularly Meredith.
Oh, man.
And I, you know, I'm just, any chance I get to be on a stage, and I'm there, loving it. And Meredith was writing these great songs, and they were incredible. And I remember in the early stages of Pity Sing and just being like, oh, Meredith, please sing into the microphone. This is amazing. Mm-hmm. And I would intentionally sing really, really loud so that she could not hear herself unless she started to push it, you know? Yeah. And I remember that we changed a lot and our voices grew a lot together.
The founders of the Early Morning Bourbon Girls talk about how they began, how the band grew, and what to expect from this month's reunion show in Fayetteville. That's in about 15 minutes on Ozarks at Large.
On the next Fresh Air Weekend, the Coen brothers discuss their new film Inside Llewyn Davis about a struggling folk singer in Greenwich Village in 1961. And we talk about the new film Anchorman 2 with Will Ferrell, who returns as Ron Burgundy, and Adam McKay, who directed both Anchorman films and co-wrote them with Ferrell. Join us.
Sunday at 6 p.m. on KUAF.
The final days of any year bring the retrospectives and the best of lists. One of the most prestigious year-end lists in the technological realm is R&D Magazine's 100. It's a catalog of the publication's choice of the top innovations of the past year. Yesterday afternoon on the University of Arkansas campus, a company with deep Northwest Arkansas ties celebrated its inclusion on the 2013 R&D list.
Right now we are going to unveil this whatever it is behind that.
Whatever's behind it.
Up here, AJ.
A plaque commemorating R&D Magazine's recognition of Springdale-based Nanomech was unveiled inside the University of Arkansas's Institute for Nanoscience and Engineering building. The R&D Top 100 salute is given to Nanomech for the creation of TuffTech, a technology which greatly reduces wear and improves the quality of cutting tools. TuffTech shares its 2013 distinction with inventions that will improve x-rays, simplify the purification of water, and increase the ability for people in space to grip better. In the previous 50 years, the R&D list has put a spotlight on the ATM, the fax machine, and HDTV during the infancy of those innovations. Yesterday's plaque unveiling came in front of a standing room only crowd of U of A faculty, staff, administration, and students in the lobby of the Nanoscience building. Jim Phillips, the CEO of Nanomech, told the audience that the work in nanotechnology will change the world.
100 years from now, I can promise you, at the end of this century anyway, when we look back in America, and you know, I love Facebook, I love, you know, Twitter, they're not going to be talking about how that changed America and how that created an American lead in the economy and moving forward. They're going to be looking at material science and the importance of material science and inventions that created new ways to manufacture better things that are more durable because they're nanotech-based, more durable, lighter, perhaps faster, and for sure last longer, and typically are less expensive.
After the formal ceremony, Phillips discussed the possibilities of the science further. He says almost nothing is impossible with nanotechnology because it allows scientists to work on a scale, allowing them to manipulate properties on anatomic level, thus creating new generations of materials that are stronger and longer lasting. And he says the rush to harness this science is very much like the space race of the 1960s and 70s.
Billions and billions are being spent every year by China, Russia. China has its own what's called Nanopolis, which is a huge campus, multi-billion dollar campus that's already partially built and under construction. The United States won the war of digital in the 90s. And this race for winning nanotechnology supremacy in terms of especially manufacturing is going on at an incredible pace. It is addressing a market that will be trillions of dollars in GDP over a period of time. And it has the capacity to build great consumer items that are different, tremendous advances in medicine, cures, and then also, of course, like any technology, it can be weaponized. So it's a very important technology going forward.
NanoMech's Chief Technology Officer, A.J. Malshi, is also the 21st Century Professor of Materials, Manufacturing, and Integrated Systems in the U of A's College of Engineering. He told yesterday's audience that he has a vivid memory of explaining his work and the work of his colleagues to Jim Phillips in 2000.
And in 2000, people were thinking about nanotechnology, and I saw that we have something that we can use to build. There is always the first mover advantage, and there's always a passion. So it is like I live my life 7 days and 48 hours, 24 hours on the internet and 24 in the real world. That's what drove me.
Malshi echoes the excitement of Jim Phillips when it comes to what nanotechnology might mean for the future. To help explain how the technology could change so much, he says, imagine a single human hair. That strand's diameter measures in at about 70,000 nanometers.
People work at the 1,000th of the diameter of our hair at that scale to build materials.
Working with materials on such a small scale redefines the very fabric of how those materials can be created. Think, he says, of the periodic table of elements. Science has used those elements in a sort of two-dimensional fashion. Nanotechnology, in a way, expands that table to a three-dimensional form.
So in effect, you have built two-dimensional, three-dimensional world using two-dimensional periodic table. We are limited now. 7 billion people now, 2045, 9 billion. How are you going to feed, provide, help more, 2 billion people more? So you need to expand the periodic table for properties, for functions. And nanoscale allows to add the third axis to that periodic table.
Both Malshi and Phillips say the work being done in Arkansas with nanotechnology puts the region, the campus, and the state near or at the top of the class in the United States. Phillips says the nanotechnology building on campus alone puts Arkansas ahead of at least 40 states. NanoMech began on the university campus, and in 2005, the university licensed technology patents to the company for commercial use. The university says the company has paid nearly $600,000 in royalties since. The company employs about 35 people. Most of them have University of Arkansas degrees. David Gearhart, the university's chancellor, was at yesterday's event, and he said it was his predecessor, John White, who first mentioned to him the concept of nanotechnology.
And he said, well, that's real little bitty tiny things. I remember that well. But it may have been John White several years ago when we were talking about it. And he was talking about how the university could become a superpower in nanotechnology. But in order to do that, we've got to have a facility. And so he really got to work on getting this thing done and built and opened. But I think that was the first time that I've heard the word nano before, but that I really knew what we were talking about.
Chancellor Gearhart says the success of NanoMech so far confirms a message that the university has been sending for the past few years.
That a major research university can spawn research that is going to have an impact on the state from an economic perspective. I mean, they're hiring people, they're creating jobs at very high salaries. And this product really could become huge worldwide. And that will spin off income to the university. So it's a great, great day for the University of Arkansas to be recognized as one of the 100 best inventions in the nation, in the world.
A.J. Malshi yesterday lauded the work of not just his colleagues and their dedication to science, but also the investors and the academic backers of the company. He says for new companies to thrive, there have to be risk takers, like Jim Phillips, the CEO of NanoMech. For his part, Phillips says if backing a company like NanoMech is risky, it's the kind of risk that's well measured.
There's always risks because you're not the only guy working on typically this innovation. Across the world, people have recognized the importance of it. So you have to risk your capital, your time. But at the end of the day, no matter what happens, it does have a tendency to all come together, all the people working on this technology, to create really better things for people that make a better society. So it's not just about the company, but no risk, no gain. That's been around hundreds of years, it's still here.
And the company is not resting. Yesterday, Jim Phillips pointed at the just unveiled plaque commemorating the 2013 achievement and said R&D Magazine has already requested NanoMech submit something for the 2014 list.
We hope to put, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 of these up here in the next few years. And we have a number of technology platforms we're working on simultaneously. So absolutely, it's every day. We call our business a 748 business. So that's a little more than just all day, every day.
He says stay tuned for what might be next. This is Ozarks at Large.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Stephen Bias and the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra announces the Christmas with the APO concert tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Arend Arts Center in Bentonville. You can enjoy one of Arkansas's greatest collaborative musical holiday celebrations featuring Grammy Award-winning soprano Leona Mitchell, the Ozark Bronze Handbell Ensemble, and the University of Arkansas Children's Choir. For more information, visit arkansasphilharmonic.org.
The Jingle Bell Jog and Reindeer Relays, an event to benefit the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks, takes place tomorrow morning. It begins at 8 in the morning at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks. It will include complimentary breakfast, music, door prizes, awards for best times, and prizes for best costumes. Registration available online through registerwizard.com. You could also call 530-8084.
And if you're already looking forward to 2014, you can ring in the new year with Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art during the inaugural New Year's celebration. It will feature music by Leah and the Mojo Doctors and DJ Havoc, dancing, food, and drinks. For details, visit crystalbridges.org.
Now, if you need to know where Santa's going to be in just a moment, Becca Barton Brown from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers will tell us. But here's one place he'll be tomorrow as well. He's going to be all over the place.
He is very busy this time of year.
Yes, he is. And he's helping out the Washington County Animal Shelter. They're offering a $10 adoption fee for pets this week. He's going to be on hand helping out tomorrow. If you want more information about that, 695-3450. And at the risk of making you uneasy, because I'm going to be talking about next month, you don't like the passage of time, but
I don't.
Just mark this down on your calendar. The Mary McDonald Music Series will present a concert by Quink. They're a group of four Dutch singers whose special style of a cappella music has helped establish their rep as a group that captivates audiences. It's going to be a free performance late January, January 28th at 7 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church in Fort Smith. If you want to know more information, 783-8919.
I'm Bob Garfield. On this week's On the Media, he was named Time Magazine's Man of the Year. But did Pope Francis set out to be the most retweeted pope in history?
It's more like stories about the pope tend to go viral than the pope himself kind of conceiving some master plan in the Vatican to get everyone to retweet him.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Sunday at 11 a.m. on KUAF.
It is Friday, December 20th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
With the most important thing that I have ever, ever, ever possibly said on Ozarks at Large.
Oh, man.
Okay.
I'm listening.
Here we go.
I have the Santa sightings for the rest of this week.
That is very important.
There you go.
11 to 8. Today and tomorrow at the Northwest Arkansas Mall, noon to 6 on Sunday, noon to 6 Monday and Christmas Eve.
Okay.
Pinnacle Hills Promenade is 10 to 8 today and tomorrow, noon to 6 on Sunday, 10 to 8 on Monday and Tuesday, and 8 to 6 on Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And Central Mall in Fort Smith is 10 to 9 today and tomorrow, 11 to 8 on Sunday, 9 to 9 on Monday, and 8 to 6 on Christmas Eve.
Okay.
Take note. This is important.
Where is he on Thursday?
My house.
Okay.
He lives there.
Okay.
Did you not know that?
I didn't know, no.
Oh, I'm probably not supposed to tell. It's the witness protection thing.
Well, you know.
Also this weekend, the Nutcracker is on stage at the Walton Arts Center.
That's become something of a tradition for that venue.
It has, and it's a nice thing to do the last weekend before Christmas.
God, I think I'm still going to miss it every year.
I know, I do too. 7 o'clock today, 2 and 7 tomorrow, and 2 on Sunday. Tickets start at, is it 24? I didn't write that down. Call them and find out.
I was about to say.
A Christmas Carol continues this weekend, the Theater Squared production at the Nadine Baum Studios, 7:30 today, 2 and 7:30 tomorrow, and 2 and 7 on Sunday. And those tickets start at $15. And on Saturday, there's an event at the Victory Theater in Rogers that's kind of cool.
Kind of old-timey.
Yeah. The Polar Express. Kids 3 to 12 and their families can watch the movie and have cookies and hot cocoa, wear your jammies, and visit with Santa. Starts at 10 o'clock Saturday morning, and tickets are $10.
Now, you have to get the tickets online as well.
MainStreetRogers.com.
True or false? I think both of you or either of you will know this. The Victory Theater in downtown Rogers was a movie theater.
True.
True.
Okay. So it's kind of going, this is kind of experiencing what it did for many decades.
Do you remember when it was a flea market?
I do not.
They built a false second floor that continued from the balcony.
This.
It
yeah.
was very
oh.
odd. Yeah. Very odd.
When you were a kid, I digress for a second, did you go to weekend matinees?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Antoinette?
I don't
okay.
think so.
Okay.
Well, I'm trying to think. I remember... When you have four kids, you don't necessarily go to the theater very often.
Right.
I do recall going to the drive-in a bit as a child.
Okay.
We only had one movie theater in town, so you didn't get to go very often.
Same here.
Because the movie didn't change.
Change, right. If it was a popular movie, it'd be on for 3 or 4 weeks.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
That was a long time ago. People played the piano. No.
No.
Well, fun.
All right. And the last event for this weekend, and it could solve a lot of your problems.
Okay.
The Itty Bitty Weddington Christmas Sale.
Where is this?
This is some of the Block Street artists, because the Block Street Art Show was canceled by this year's Snowmageddon.
Right.
And it includes Faye Alter and Susan Shore and Deborah Dubois, and it's 11 to 4 on Saturday at 16193 Pin Oak Road in Fayetteville.
Do you know what kind of art... Faye Alter does, because I only ever think of her as the costume designer for Arch Life Theater.
She makes those fabulous, I just forgot the name of the cloth. She makes bags.
Oh, okay.
And they're wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And Deborah Dubois, of course, makes rugs.
Right.
So.
Okay.
This could solve the last of your problems. Then you won't need Santa. There you go.
All right. Thank you, Becca.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. For several years, the band Early Morning Bourbon Girls would turn up all over Fayetteville. Formed by Rebecca Champagne and Meredith Martin Motes, the band began as a duo playing at the Fayetteville Farmers Market. They were formed from the ashes of a couple of other bands familiar in the early 2000s in Fayetteville, Pity Sing and Woods of Fire. Soon, Meredith, who at the time was working as a producer for Ozarks at Large, and Rebecca had a few more women singing with them, and then a few more. Over time, some of the members left town, and eventually the Early Morning Bourbon Girls ceased playing together. But Saturday, December 28th, many of them will gather back for a reunion show of sorts at Maxine's Tap Room in Fayetteville. This past weekend, the two founding members, Rebecca and Meredith, came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio to play some music and talk about the beginnings of the Early Morning Bourbon Girls.
Meredith and I have been playing music together for several years already. Woods of Fire had recorded an album, and that band was kind of done. A lot of the members were moving on to do other things. And so Meredith and I decided that we didn't want to stop singing together, but we wanted it to be a genesis of something different. And so that's how we started with the Early Morning Bourbon Girls, just the two of us at the farmer's market.
And then it grew, and it grew.
Oh, yes, it did.
We started off doing... I kind of didn't want to write songs for a while. I was kind of wanting to explore more traditional music, and so we were working with that, and we were thinking, like, this would be really fun to fill these parts out with, like, bigger vocals and stuff like that, and then also as well some of the stuff we've written. And then I think also we were just, like, looking around, and there were no women in music in Fayetteville, and we were both like, what's up with, you know, why is this going on? Why are there no? I mean, there were, but, like, not so much in our generation, older generations maybe. And... I was out one night, and I just started talking to people, and I was like, let's start a women's collective. Everybody come to my house on Sunday. And, like, you
anybody,
know, just start.
Open invitation. Anybody that wants to come, just come.
And then they did.
And we were very surprised that they did.
The two of you had sung. You'd been in bands, but you had some women in the Early Morning Bourbon Girls who had never sung in front of people before, right?
Yes, we absolutely did. and probably didn't really have any business singing in front of people, but we didn't care. It was fun.
Well, you know, you say that, and I remember when Meredith was first telling me about this, in the back of my head, I thought, well, is this going to work or not?
Right.
And the surprise, I don't know if I should say the surprise, but the
it worked.
It worked so well.
It did. Yeah. And we talked about that some earlier today, and it's just part of it is because, well, first of all, you get a crowd big enough. At our peak, I think we had about 14 people on stage. Mm-hmm. You get a crowd big enough, and, you know, the singers that are singing are what you're going to hear. And then the rest of it is just fun. You just see this herd of women on the stage having a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And so even the people that weren't really strong singers were contributing to the whole, the experience of the Bourbon Girls at the time.
Yeah, and I think, too, you know, like, oftentimes men, like, especially in, like, indie pop and indie rock and stuff, which was what I was influenced by as a teenager, are, like, really encouraged to be experimental with instruments and stuff. Like, it does it. You don't have to, like, be really good at an instrument to pick it up and start playing with other people. And I don't really feel like that's really encouraged in, like, teenage, at least not when I was a teenager, like, in early 20s and stuff. And so we wanted to, we felt certain that these women could play. They just had never really tried, you know. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to create this environment where, like, oh, you've always wanted to pick this up. Come pick it up.
Yeah.
We don't care
now's
if it doesn't
chance.
Sound good.
Yeah.
Just do it. Like, you know, and so
oh,
it was really...
you can stomp on time. Oh, okay, here you go. Here's your part.
Yeah,
you're our official stomper.
Yeah, or we know you can sing harmony. Like, let's hear you, you know, like, and so it was like, and then getting used to, like, going from singing really softly to, like, projecting your voice and stuff like that. And we just knew there was all this talent in the town that wasn't necessarily, we weren't hearing them play out. And so we wanted to kind of create this space where people could come and feel safe to be like, okay, yeah, I'll try it, you know?
The whole thing started with the two of you at the farmer's market. So
yes.
It's just you and you. And
yes.
You know each other. You know how you work. You know how you sing. You know when to come in.
Yep.
Then what was it like to have that multiplied several times?
It was like herding cats.
Well, and Heather was probably the third person who, or mm-hmm. was the third person who came in. And Heather had been in Woods of Fire with us. And
mm-hmm.
so Heather
so
played.
So there was familiarity mm-hmm. there with working with her.
She did trumpet, guitar, and she was starting to write her own songs, too, which was cool. So we were both writing songs, me and Heather. So that was really cool to see her kind of go from working on writing songs to actually doing ones that she brought to the group and said, hey, let's work with this, you
mm-hmm.
know. But yeah, it was like her.
It was yeah, and it was kind
fun.
Of like
yeah.
kind of like, you know, anything goes. And then eventually one of us would be like, okay, we need to actually practice. There, you know, it did require some whip cracking mm-hmm. and like, let's get focused.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody would bring an idea, we'd try it and we would do it, or we would all say, not so much, mm-hmm. move on. It was
and that
very
was
collaborative.
The funnest part was having people be like, you know, maybe somebody who'd been coming for a few weeks, and then they would be like, you know, I have an idea. And then it would be like a really great idea, you know, and that was so fun to see, you know. People come in and say, well, I haven't really ever done this before. And then within a few weeks, they're like, well, what if we put this harmony here? What if
right.
we added this? Or I don't know, maybe we should put this verse here. Like kind of actually taking these songs that we'd written or some traditionals we'd put together and actually helping us deconstruct the songs and put them mm-hmm. back in a way that worked for the group. That was so cool.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
What are you going to play for this? Do we call it a reunion show? Just a show?
Well, it's kind of a reunion show. That was the spirit behind it, you know, taking advantage of Christmas break and some people were going to be in town. And we've talked over the years how it would be fun to do a reunion show. It's not necessarily a reunion in the sense that we're missing, you know, half the members. We're just widespread all over the country and all over the world. So it's a semi-reunion show. We're mm-hmm. missing a lot of faces and voices, mm-hmm. but, yeah, reunion show.
And we're going to try to do some stuff that me and Rebecca kind of did by ourselves, and also some we're going to do some Woods of Fire stuff, which is a band before as well. So it's going to be a hodgepodge of, like,
we're
going to
do whatever the heck we want, because the point of the show is for Meredith and I to get to sing together and have a blast. It may be our last chance. Who knows? But I know people at Maxine's, so I knew we had a venue. They would not tell me no. So we're just going to play whatever we want, basically.
Well, can you play something now?
Sure.
Sure. Yeah, so this was a cover. This was the Carter family recorded it, made it, I guess, well known or whatever. And this actually was going to be our band name.
Oh,
for
yeah,
a while.
We thought when we started at that first farmer's market morning, we thought what are we going to call ourselves? And we thought maybe we'd call ourselves Single Girl, Married Girl, because at the time that was our actual status. One of us was single, one was married, and it just didn't, you know, wasn't quite right. So as we caught ourselves pouring bourbon in our coffee, we realized that, oh, we are the early morning bourbon girls. Because how else do you get up and sing at 7 in the morning?
Right, or we were like trying
as
to
a 20-something especially, you know, like that was a struggle.
Yeah.
7 o'clock is nothing nowadays, but.
Right. But hot toddies will do the trick when you gotta sing at 6 o'clock on Saturday morning.
You guys like singing together so much.
I love it.
How did you find out that? How did that start? You singing together?
Gosh, Barnes and Noble.
Yeah,
like 98 or 99, yeah. I guess.
I knew Meredith worked at Barnes and Noble. Well, you did too, Rebecca?
No,
it was 2000. Because I didn't move to Fayetteville until 2000. So
yeah, I guess it was like 2000. I hung out and was friends with people that worked at Barnes and Noble. We owe a lot to Barnes & Noble, actually, come to think of it.
We really do.
And so we would all, you know, go to shows together and sit around and play music together. And Meredith and Brian were working on stuff, and I basically was, you know, I kind of invited myself, is how I remember it, mm-hmm. with the original version of Pity Sing. Like, oh, I sing. Y'all just need to let me sing this part right here.
We did.
And they did. It's crazy. They did. They let me.
Yeah. Yeah. And then because there's just the three of us for a while, mm-hmm. by Pity Sing.
But I remember Meredith and I both being pretty terrified, but particularly Meredith.
Oh,
and
man.
I, you know, I'm just any chance I get to be on a stage, and I'm there loving it. And Meredith was writing these great songs, and they were incredible. And I remember in the early stages of Pity Sing and just being like, oh, Meredith, please sing into the microphone. This is amazing. Yeah. And I would intentionally sing really, really loud so that she could not hear herself unless she started to push it, you know. Yeah. And I remember that we changed a lot, and our voices grew a lot together over the years.
Yeah, I would have never got out there and sing if it hadn't been for Becca Fishman, because I would literally... Like, when it was time to play a show, I would just want to throw up. Like, I was just so terrified and just, like, miserable. I was like, why does anyone ever want to do this? Like, and then, like, Rebecca, like, just really pushed me. And she was like, sing on the mic, sing on the mic, you know. And it took me about 8 years. And now I'm sort of not nervous anymore after eight years or whatever.
Meredith, I have to ask this because, of course, you worked with me for four years?
Mm-hmm.
You would produce Audition. Did being on the radio bother you?
No.
Okay.
No,
I understand that, believe me.
It's just a different, I don't know. Yeah, it's just a different kind of feel. And also the emphasis was, when you're working in radio, the emphasis on the other person that you're interviewing. It's not on you.
Yeah.
And that was really fun because you get to highlight other people's stories. But this is like, you're up there and you're like singing the song.
And you're like, oh, this is a song I wrote, bearing my soul and my heart, by the way. So please judge me and whether or not I'm on key and the content of my song.
Right.
The first song that you sang, you know, Single Girl, because you guys have gone through so many changes since you started,
yes.
Right? You're both married. You're both moms. You
totally got a haircut.
you both changed careers.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot that's happened since.
A lot. We've been joking about we should probably change the band name from Early Morning Bourbon Girls to.
Yeah, what was it?
I don't even know. It's like.
Late Night Coffee.
Yeah, Late Night, Give Me a Second Cup of Coffee. I Have Too Many Kids, Girls, or something. A lot more babies, a lot less bourbon.
Yeah, sure.
Well, how about another song?
Sure.
Okay.
Our hands in the hot water springs, a bedpost in the bar, but we were too young to drink. I should have known this wouldn't come back to haunt you. Painting of biscuits on the wall, they've probably torn it down since then. Tank of gas. That night you left, I fell asleep so fast. And I dreamed that you were dying, that white shirt red. I should have known this would come back to haunt me. The spider web meets the broom. It's also common to see a house built so tall, softly crashing down.
Okay, I don't want to get too philosophical, but do you think your lives were changed because of the Early Morning Bourbon Girls?
Oh, yeah. I think pretty much everybody involved in it. We were reminiscing earlier talking about how there were some people that came in that had never sung in front of anybody before. And, you know, and then you all of a sudden they're in this mix and they find a voice and they find a safe herd that they can move around in this pack. And we would, you know, go out and watch shows and just be involved in a part of things that we probably wouldn't have just as individuals. Mm-hmm. Certainly. Yeah, I know that definitely our lives are changed.
Yeah, and I would have never started doing music on my own, by myself doing coffee shops and stuff, if it hadn't been for Bourbon Girls, because like I said, I was so nervous. Rebecca had to practically drag me on stage every time we had a Woods of Fire show, to then I went to voluntarily being like, I'll play this show with this coffee. I didn't really enjoy it, but I did do it. It's not that I didn't enjoy it, it's just that I missed the harmony. For me, singing without harmony is
Yeah, I feel the same way, too.
Saturday night, the 28th, at Maxine's. What time?
Maxine's, 7 o'clock, and we're going to be joined by a newly developed band called A Room Full of Friends, which is basically the band formerly known as The Good Fear.
Well, thank you both for coming in.
Yeah, you bet.
Meredith Martin Motes and Rebecca Champagne are two members of the band The Early Morning Bourbon Girls, and they were inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio earlier this week. The reunion show will be Saturday night at Maxine's Tap Room in downtown Fayetteville. The show is free. We'll hear another song from them Sunday morning at 9 on the next edition of Weekend Ozarks at Large.
This year, stories from the NPR archives that touch on the meaning of Christmas, our hopes, and our fears. David Sedaris, Bailey White, Scott Simon, these and other voices of NPR past and present telling stories of the season in an hour-long Christmas special. I'm Lynn Neary. Join me for Tinsel Tales from NPR.
Listen Christmas Day from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. to KUAF Public Radio.
And that is Tinsel Tales, which you can hear Wednesday at noon and again at 7. Well, actually, starting at 11.
Right.
From 11 to 1 Wednesday afternoon. So it will be covering up
of note
as well as Ozarks at Large.
We'll take the day off.
We'll take the day off, but we will be back with plenty of more shows after that.
Well, and a reminder that our Christmas Eve edition.
Yes, maybe we should just start with Monday. So Monday will be a regular show.
Well, it'll be Christina by herself.
Yes.
We're making her come in. That's the decision. Since she doesn't co-host Friday, we make these decisions.
Yeah, that's how that works.
So she's hosting Monday.
She's hosting Monday. And then Tuesday, we will have highlights from our Christmas show that we had at the public library earlier this month. Wednesday.
Lots of music.
Lots of Christmas music. So hopefully get you in the Christmas mood if you aren't quite there yet. Wednesday will be Tinsel Tales.
Yes.
Thursday will be
kind of a regular show. I'll be hosting.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Kinder will come in. We'll
do your annual year-end best of list of music.
Yeah, we call it our favorites.
Your favorite.
We're not so arrogant.
So your favorite 10
yes.
CDs,
yes.
albums of the year?
Yes. We're not saying they're necessarily the best, but they're each of our favorites.
Sure.
Yes. And we'll have some more things on that day.
Mm-hmm.
Friday, a bit of a special show as well.
Mm-hmm.
We'll hear again the voices of some of the people who left us in 2013 that we've interviewed over the past 24 years on Ozarks at Large.
So that should be good. And then Sunday, of course.
Sunday's normal.
Just Sunday.
Christina and
Sunday.
I will come in on Sunday, the 27th.
Yes. And then the following week is when we do our annual favorite show. The Ozarks at Large staff gets together and pick some of our favorite stories from the past 12 months, and we sit down and talk about them and re-air some of those for you throughout the week.
Right. We get the whole crew together.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. So we'll have that Monday through Friday, and then the following Sunday, the 5th, we will talk specifically about some of our favorite performers in the last 6 months of the year.
And then Monday, January 6th.
I'll be back, and it'll be a regular show.
We'll be back to normal.
To normal-ish.
Yes.
As normal as we get.
That's right. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. I think this is the last time we're together before.
I think so.
Christmas and New Year's.
Well, we'll be together on the 24th.
That will, yes.
Sure.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
but I mean, our work schedules will be
yes.
such that we won't see much of each other.
No, we won't.
Over the next few weeks. So, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Any resolution for you?
Resolution to have resolutions? I mean, I think it's always kind of a generic one to be a better person, be better about scheduling and time management and exercising more frequently, you know, kind of the regular lame ones that everybody has. Nothing too incredibly inventive, sorry.
No, that's okay. Well, you don't have to be inventive. Perhaps that means you're in a very good place.
Just improvement, really, is what I kind of shoot for.
So Antoinette Grajeda version 2014,
mm-hmm.
just a bit improved on 2013?
That's the hope.
That's kind of where I go. I mean, not that I want you to improve. Okay, there's no way to extricate myself out of this with that.
There's not.
Yes. All right, well, thanks so much for listening. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
My name is Vinette Grajeda. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Deer.